So the bit of the passage that I got most excited about, and that I've always got very excited about, is that opening kind of exchange when Joshua sees the man holding the sword and he asks him the very reasonable question, you know, if you're about to go into battle and you see a big guy with a sword who clearly has got quite an imposing presence, good question. Are you for me or are you for the other side? And you get this extraordinary response from the guy with the sword of, so just look at it in 14. In the NIV, and I looked through loads of others, it isn't always a load of the kind of different translations. It's not always start with neither, but he definitely doesn't say, hey, I'm on your side. That isn't the nature of his answer. In the NIV, it says, neither, he replied, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. And I just want you, I mean, I don't know if you normally do this, but I want you to think about, what do you think that person, and we'll debate in a second, who is that person with the sword? But what is he trying to tell Joshua through that answer? Because it's a very straightforward and a good question by Joshua. So why does he reply in frankly, a slightly obtuse way? It's not an altogether straight answer, especially you've got a sword, mate. So, you know, what's your, you know, are you with me or in that situation? I'd really want to know, you know, what are you doing? So in the chat function, you might, don't feel you have to do this, but in the chat function to everyone, if you don't mind, just quickly write down, what do you think the person with the sword is trying to tell Joshua through that answer? There are but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. So just take a minute or so, and then I'm going to tell you what I kind of think in a bit. And then Jenny, I'm going to kind of ask you, what do you think as well? Because that I've heard that interpreted quite a few ways. And, you know, which have all actually over the years been quite helpful to me. so just pile into the chat, if you don't mind, what you think that might mean. So what do you think?
Can I say something? My chat doesn't work. So I just say this. It looks as though he doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want there to be any fight. He's above it all. It's like when he sees children in fighting in a classroom and his teacher that walks in, now, no fighting, you lot, either side. It looks as though he thinks one side's as bad as the other.
Excellent. Thank you, Madeline. Thank you. Roger, you've got to explain that just quickly.
Yeah, it's a phrase from a guy called Edward de Bono who's done things like lateral thinking. And he says, often people close down when they ask a question, particularly one with a yes-no answer.
Yeah.
And so he came up with this word po, which you answer because it's neither yes nor no.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, you're asking the wrong question.
Yeah.
Unask a question and think of a bigger question, a higher level question, a different way of looking at the item.
Yeah.
And I think to an extent that's what's happening here with the response to Joshua. He's kind of thinking very much, you know, you're on my side or on the enemy's side, and it's like, you know, open your eyes, something else is happening beyond what you're expecting.
Yeah. Great. Well, do read people's comments, actually. They're really, I've loved this part, by the way. I should say it's not I haven't loved loads of things about lockdown, but there's sometimes I've really loved, I love the fact that you can get a lot of comments from people quite concisely by using things like chat. So the way I've heard that answer interpreted that I found really helpful, and I think, you know, there's something in this, is I've heard people say that quite often Christians, and I really fall foul of this, I'm quite them and us. You know, like there's one side and there's another side. So a bit as Roger's saying, that you know, that there are two sides, and it can make life quite adversarial. So there's Christians and there's non-Christians. I'm not saying that clearly is the case. Or there's my fight and there's another fight. You know, particularly at the moment, another one of the things that's given me some sleepless nights recently has been the George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, you know, realizing I just wasn't as bothered, I'm afraid, about that as clearly my black friends were. I wasn't as upset. And so I've begun trying to kind of challenge myself about that more. But one of the things I've concluded about that issue is that it's not a white issue and it's not a black issue to fight, you know. So it's, I've also concluded white people need to fight that issue a lot more and speak up a lot more. But so I've heard that verse and the that person's response there involves neither, but has come up. So in other words, don't think about sides, think about God's cause. And I think that is helpful, you know, that don't think about you've got a battle to win. That's very good, is the angel above fighting. But don't think you've got a battle to win. Think about what battle is God fighting. And I know, Madeline, I wouldn't get too hung up on the language being about fighting. Sometimes in the Old Testament, what's physical in the Old Testament is spiritual in the New Testament. Though, in my opinion, there is no question that this battle happens, because in Hebrews it's referred to, heroes, the kind of heroes of faith are called out from this. So I do think it really happened. There was a fight. But there's an adversarial part to it that I think we should learn from, which is when you're getting into a fight, don't think about, oh, that's what I need, this is my fight. Think about what's God's cause in that. But actually, you know, as I was preparing, particularly this talk, I do think the person is Jesus. So the person with the sword is Jesus. And, you know, there'd be some debate about that, but the longer I've been a Christian, the more I think that Jesus is, you know, in the Old Testament, in loads of places throughout, and the whole, and, you know, here's an example of him intervening. So basically, in that verse, Jesus turns up and says to Joshua, hey, don't you worry about having to lead this battle. I am going to stand in your shoes and fight the battle for you. And, you know, because it is God's battle. So any battle we are facing where we are doing God's work, don't worry about feeling it has to be your battle. You know, Jesus comes to us. So in thinking about Peckham, in thinking about London and wanting people to hear the good news of Jesus, in thinking about, you know, frankly, the outcome of, you know, the economic outcome of lockdown and all that's going to mean for our neighbours, our community, that battle is the Lord's. And Jesus says to us, doesn't mean we haven't got stuff to do, but Jesus says to us, I am in charge of this army and I will lead the way. And therefore, the Lord is on your side, and all the resources that come from that, the incredible resources that God can bring to bear, which of course are then played out in, you know, the victory that Joshua wins. You know, I think God wants him to know in that it's not because of his might, not because of his tactics, the way he arranged his army, you know, anything clever he did. It's purely because of his faith in the Lord, and that Jesus was in command of that army. He took Joshua's place, literally took his place. And of course, that is a picture in itself of, you know, of life, that, you know, in tough situations, God comes and stands in our situation in order to play the crucial role, you know, the defining role. So that's kind of how I love Joshua's then response to that, you know, verse 15. End of verse 14. I mean, so at verse 15, he's got a great response, which is, you know, he's overcome by awe, and, you know, he does fall face down, so around 14. But then Joshua says to Jesus, what message does my Lord have for his servant? And quite often, I think we don't realise Jesus is saying to us, hey, I'm commander of all the resources you need for whatever battle you're facing. And that's what Jesus says to us when it's his battle. What, you know, and then Joshua smiles enough to go, so is there anything you'd particularly like me to know? And that's a good question for us to ask. Whatever battle you're facing, for me, I was saying, you know, with my parents, with work, and with kind of issues of race and inclusion, you know, and what is God saying to me? What message does Jesus have to say to me as the commander of the Lord's army with access to all the resources I may need? So that was my answer. Jenny, did you, I'll hand to you your answer and then you give your kind of next piece.
Yeah. I'm going to neatly skirt around the subject of whether it's Jesus or not. That's the kind of discussion that Old Testament scholars have all day long. But what I will do is, I guess, similarly to how what you've alluded to, this is a different kind of battle story being told here. This is not the only battle story that people would have been, that would have been written around this time. Traditional battle stories, traditional histories, histories told by the winner. That's one of those kind of truisms. And it's told to intimidate often. History is told to intimidate, you know, enemies. It's told to impose a power. It's told to assert a superiority, as Andy was saying. But I think this particular portion of this whole book is like a key to say, this is a different kind of battle story you've got going on here. But I would say it is a battle. I actually don't think it's the angel or Jesus or this figure saying, you know what, this isn't a fight at all. I think he is saying it's a battle. It's a commander of the Lord's armies. You know, there is a sense of army here. And the reason why is, as we see elsewhere in the Old Testament, the Canaanite religion, which is being combated here, is... The national gods of the Canaanites demanded the sorts of sacrifice that the Lord of Creator of heaven and earth, Yahweh, the Lord of heaven and earth, takes issue with. The one of the gods of Canaan, Molech, demanded the sacrifice of children. One of the Deuteronomy and Leviticus talk about the sacrifice of children in the fire. So this was God saying, no, I have a claim on this land, and it's the claim of a loving creator God. It's not one national God having it out with another national God. It's the creator, the loving creator of heaven and earth, wanting good for the whole of his creation, seeing where there is not good, seeing where there is injustice, where children are being sacrificed in the fire, where there is... Another portion of Deuteronomy and Leviticus, they talk about the sexual abuse of women in particular, and incestuous abusive sexual relationships towards women. And God has a skin in that game. He's invested in the whole of his creation. He's invested in vulnerable women. He's invested in vulnerable children. And so where he sees their abuse in the name of power, he does want to put it right. So this is a different kind of battle story. It's not told to intimidate. It's not told to it's not told to big up a particular national hero. Joshua is not actually seen as a national hero. This is told to emphasize the loving claim of a creator God on the whole of his creation, the loving, good, just claim of his creator on the whole of his creation. And as Andy says, when Joshua asks, what part can I play? That's such an appropriate and helpful way for us to approach the loving, good, just claim of God on the whole of his creation. He still has this loving, good, just claim on the whole of his creation, and it's still not worked out in that way. People are still abused in all sorts of awful ways, and God still wants to say, no, I still have a claim on that. I still want to battle against it. So I think that the Andy's point about this this bit about saying the battle is the Lord's, yes, it is. This is a different kind of battle. It's not one national deity against another national deity. This is a Yahweh who created heaven and earth and loves heaven and earth and wants to see it come to fullness and fruition, making that claim and revealing his power, as we'll probably come on to, in a wholly different kind of way. The power of God is revealed not in intimidation, but in actually in vulnerability. So I think we can, I absolutely think we can see Jesus in that, how he's revealed, not in intimidation, but in a, actually, as we'll come on to see how the battle is conducted, in a really vulnerable, he puts his people into a vulnerable position. So yeah, over to you, Andy. We are called into a battle, I think, and well, into a claim, a loving claim on the whole of creation. Over to you.
So that was my kind of first, you know, if you're, whatever battle you're facing, my first takeaway and to think, you know, to help it frame how you approach a battle is the battle is the Lord's. So that's, and then the second is to learn from Joshua that Joshua follows the instructions. So, and the instructions are frankly absolutely ridiculous, aren't they? I mean, absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I lost sight of the fact, at least he does get to take some armed people with him. And I think I focused so much on the fact that they're required to take the ark, have people blowing trumpets in front of it. I mean, it is not the way that you would choose. And apparently, you know, I mean, Jericho, big walls, properly locked up. It says nobody's going in or out. I mean, this was a challenging battle, you know, and if we're thinking, you know, about, I do think the Lord is calling us to a battle against racism, all of us. It's not one people group's thing, you know, and it looks a bit like Jericho, but it is a fight that God is fighting and has got tremendous resources for. So we join in with that seriously, but then we need to follow instructions. And I guess I partly asked that there's some lessons we can learn from here in terms of instructions, but they're not entirely clear in terms of how you would interpret this to a battle against racism. But I did find that they gave me, so, you know, the instructions, number one, you know, take the ark. Now that I did think is kind of laughable, isn't it? So go into a battle and that, I mean, I've read a little bit about the ark. I mean, it's quite big. You shouldn't drop it or touch it. So the idea that you take that into about, and then let's put a bunch of people with trumpets in front of it. Yeah, fantastic. That's going to really help us in a battle. And, you know, I wonder, a question to all of you, you know, what's God saying in such, I mean, I don't want to be religious, but such ridiculous instructions. I mean, you know, those are not how you take a fortified city. March around it all those times, but bring the ark with you. And then on the seventh day, do that seven times, then blow the trumpet, let out a big war cry, and then all the walls will collapse. And I can't remember in the passage, does he say, he is told, I mean, it is handy that he's told the walls will collapse. So that bit, you know, and we're told, aren't we? And so Jenny alluded to the resources and the, you know, a battle we join that is God's battle. We're on the winning side. And I think often in life we lose that perspective that actually we'll win. And I've always found it really helpful to use the sporting analogy. If you love sport, if you've got a favourite team or anything and you like, I've just watched Andy, did anybody watch the BBC Andy Murray stuff, the repeats of him winning all these? They've just shown him winning, you know, because they haven't got anything else to show. They've shown him winning Wimbledon twice, the Olympics twice. And it is great watching when you know he wins, isn't it? So you watch the other guy get a bit, I watched Djokovic get a bit of a lead and push him a little bit. I watched Federer, you know, come in. I just thought, no way is he ever going to beat Federer. I never thought Murray would beat Federer. But I knew this time he won. And it makes it a much more relaxing, enjoyable thing to watch. You watch Federer hit some good shots and you go, I don't mind that. You know, that's a good moment because I know in the end, you know, Murray's going to win and we're going to really suffer. And that is, that's the point of this story, isn't it? That he says there, you know, verse 5 of 6 of chapter 6, when you hear them sound like have the whole great lodge, then the wall of the city will collapse and the army will go up, everyone straight in. We know we win now, and it doesn't always feel like that in life, but that kind of knowing that actually the crucial things in life, we have a victory, And then following those instructions. And the other crucial point I think about following the instructions is the point about taking the ark, I don't know whether anybody else would agree with this, is for me, that's about going with Jesus. So, you know, the ark is the presence of the Lord. And whatever battles you're fighting, I find it quite hard to make sure that when I get busy or pushed or challenged by something, you know, the stress of my parents, stress of work, am I bringing the ark with me? Am I bringing Jesus with me? Am I keeping the presence of God with me? And I think that's the importance of that instruction. Yeah. And just as a practical example then, of, you know, following instructions on another level, you know, I found with my parents, you know, difficult situation, but we lived in the States from 2002 to 2007. Everybody thought we would stay when we were living there. And we heard a sermon by somebody who took the honour your mother and father, who basically applied that as look after them in their old age. And we were wondering, should we move back to the UK? And we just felt like, you know what, they're getting old. That is the right interpretation for us. That really spoke to us that we'll move back. We want to be there with them in their old. We want them to see their grandchildren grow up. And that's, we've got the fruit of that now, that I'm able to be with my parents when they're old, you know, not some huge distance between us. And that really is about following the instructions as well. So just follow the instructions, however ridiculous sometimes they may appear to be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just to emphasize, do put your thoughts in the chat as well. Continue to say, like, what does the instructions that Andy's just brought out, what do they say to you about how we are to engage in the battles that God calls us to engage in? I just want to kind of, echoing what Andy said, but also and referring back to some of the passages that we've been looking at over the last weeks and months, is that notice the heavy lifting the priests have to do, not only here, but when they crossed the Jordan a few chapters ago. It's the priests who are the first in and the last out of the Jordan. It's the priests who have to go around the city, and nobody else at the beginning, reading this on, nobody else is making a noise. It's the priests who are blowing the trumpets. So they're the one who are expending energy. They're the ones who are making themselves visible, who are making themselves vulnerable, and who are making themselves fools, frankly, like who are doing this ridiculous thing of walking around a city six times and not attacking it, but are looking very exposed. They're making themselves vulnerable. The priests do a lot of heavy lifting where it comes to what to do. And here, and I would love it if we'd all just chant along one of Jenny's favourite, you know, this is Jenny's preaching a sermon, bingo passages. You are a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. We looked through 1 Peter when we first went into lockdown, and we read that, and we thought about, what does it mean to be a priesthood? It means to be temperature setting, not temperature reading. It means to be a thermostat, not a thermometer. So we see that reflection of what the priests do. The priests make themselves visible, make themselves vulnerable, and make themselves fools for the cause of Christ. And I think that's got a lot to say to us about where we're to engage in the battle, to be courageously making ourselves vulnerable and visible and foolish. I'm seeing the comments coming in, which is great. I'll read those in just a second. This made me think about a tweet that I read earlier in the week, a set of tweets, saying in the current climate where people are reflecting on slavery and the evil of slavery, are kind of putting themselves, white people like myself, will easily put ourselves in, oh, well, I would have been an abolitionist. I would have fought for the freeing of slaves. And this person was saying, that's, you know, if we're all saying that, like, can we really read that into ourselves? I really hope that I would have been an abolitionist. I really hope I would have fought for that. But this tweet went on to say something along the lines of, if we are willing today to put ourselves into the places where our friends reject us, where the economy is against us, where the culture is against us, are we willing to put ourselves into those places to expose ourselves to ridicule, to mockery, to taking the foolish position? It's only really then, if we are doing those things, that we can genuinely say that we would have been fighting for the emancipation of the slaves back in the day. But that's where the priestly people of God, who is us today in Jesus, where we're called to be. And if that is the case, since there is spiritual heavy lifting to do, again, just to go back to what Andy says, the resources are from God. So I think the very first thing that the Joshua is told to do, take off your shoes. This is holy ground you're standing on. Make space for holiness. Make space for worshipping the Lord. Make space for listening to him. Because without that kind of spirituality, all of the activism that all of us are called into in all sorts of ways, we cannot... There's this line in the ordination service: you cannot bear the weight of this in your own strength. That is true for ordination. It's true for every one of us. If we're all called into the royal priesthood, you cannot bear the weight of this in your own strength. So make space for holiness. I think this is a spirituality for activists that that is marked in the end of chapter 5. Meet with God. And then, as Andy says, go with him. Go with the presence of the Lord into every space you go into. Only in that way do we have the spiritual resources to be people who make ourselves vulnerable and visible and foolish for Christ. Only then do we have the spiritual resources to not become prideful, to not become to not fight our own battles rather than the Lord's. To me, it sounds a lot like act justly, love mercy, walk humbly with God. That is the spirituality that resources fighting in the Lord's just good battles, engaging in the Lord's good, just loving claim on the whole of creation. There looks like some great chats moment come in. I'm just going to have a look at it. I'll take a pause.
Yeah. I do think the point, I couldn't agree more. And a couple of people have said the thing about, I don't subscribe to the, you know, Christians should always be doing stupid, wacky things. But I absolutely do subscribe that sometimes we're asked to do things that don't, you know, might not make a huge amount of sense. And that it's not the obvious thing to do. And I think particularly, you know, that your point, Jenny, that I had not spotted about the priests go first and we're all priests. Mm. I mean, often if you go first, you do look a bit stupid. I mean, you know, stupid at best, but if you've gone first speaking out against racism, boy, you've taken an absolute hosing in the past. Now, you know, if more of us speak up, then it becomes more acceptable. But white people need to speak out against racism. They need to be first because we're the majority. And then it makes it, you know, other people will get picked on less for doing it. But quite often it does just require, yeah, go first and be willing to stand out.
Andy, I don't know if you had any particular thoughts on heading to a response.
I just had one.
Yeah, go on. You go.
I had one thing, which just was, there's the closing thought, which the Old Testament scholars amongst us will argue about, which fortunately limits us to, you know, not too many of us. But regardless of whether or not you think it was Jesus or not, I would always make the point that we quite often miss Jesus. We fail to see him. And, you know, that's a point. I imagine most of the people, I imagine everybody on this is, you know, has met Jesus and accepted Jesus into their hearts. But many of our friends haven't. And yet it's just like this sort of encounter. It's like, you know, that, you know, Jesus is just there and Joshua recognizes him and has the right response of falling down in reverence and awe and says, hey, what do you want to say to me? What are your instructions? And, you know, we need to have that response, but we also want other people to have that response. You know, we want our friends to realize it's Jesus, not just a guy with a sword.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so helpful. Yeah. Yeah, to recognise Jesus and to hear his word for us. Yeah. I wonder if the kind of the initial stage of our response might be for us each just personally to reflect on what we've been thinking about. It might be that you'll want to think about the battles that you find yourself in, or a battle that you think God is calling you into that you maybe not taken that first first step yet. So it might be something around that. It may be about this specific thing of which of your friends have not got to recognize Jesus that you want to bring into his presence. It might be this thing about listening, asking for a command, asking for what would you say to me, Lord? And it might be about this do justly, love mercy, walk humbly with God. It might be that I think those three things cannot be separated, but it might be that one of those just God just tugs at your heart and goes, oh yeah, I just need to say to God, yeah, would you help me to do that more? I'm going to give us a few moments just to ask God what he's saying to us. And then Andy, if you would, perhaps you would, we haven't done this in the evening service before. I'm just going to offer that if people want to just put a hand up, that Andy would just pray a prayer over all of us of putting our hands up. We don't have to say what it's for, but just kind of in response to pray a prayer, and then we'll break it into individual prayer. Does that make sense? But let's have some time just reflecting on what the Lord is saying to each one of us. I wonder if when it comes down to it, what this is about is us being available to God's purposes. And if you would just want to say, yes, I am available to God's purposes, and that might be something that is, you know, you absolutely always feel that, or you just want to make a bit of a, to recommit to that, I guess, I'm available to the Lord's purposes, and want to hear from God what that is. I wonder if you'd raise a hand, and we're not going to do anything weird. I'm just going to ask Andy if he wouldn't mind just Andy's raised his hand as well. Yeah. Well, Andy can start praying and then I'll chip in and then we'll open up to everybody. But if you just want to say to the Lord, I'm available for your purposes, speak to me and show yourself to me. Andy, would you kick us off in prayer about that?
Yeah, Father, thank you that you are willing to stand in our place and fight the battles that actually we may not realize we want to fight, but we're called to fight, the battles that count. And you're the commander of the Lord's army. Lord, for everybody here, I pray that you would help us to play our part, to join in with what you're doing. I pray that you would show people the battles you've caused them to, you want them to fight. There's some people here who might not realize what they're being called into or are shying away from a fight. And then there are some people who are absolutely overwhelmed by the fight. And I pray that you would show them victory. You'd show them that the final victory is won. You know, you'd help them breathe and know underneath of the everlasting arms. Mm-hmm. And then there are some people who need instructions for what to do, just to for that victory as to the next step in navigating the battle, whether they're to, what that might mean for them, training, taking on a new responsibility, stepping out a little bit, or actually just stepping back a little bit. So Lord, would you show them clearly the instructions, speak to them. And I pray for all of us that we would respond as Joshua responded, and that you'd give us hearts that are open to saying, what's your message for me? And Lord, help us hear that message in the name of Jesus. Amen.
And Lord, I thank you that you are with us, and because you're with us, this is holy ground. In each one of the places that we are, in each of our homes, thank you that your presence is here. And I wonder if there's just the Lord wants to just say the place where each one of us is, the situation that we're in, the job that we're in, the relationship, the set of relationships that we're in, the family we're in, the home we're in, this now is a site of God's work and a site of God's intervention and a site of God's holiness. So I just pray, Lord, that we would recognize the awesome nature of your presence in the people around us, the situation around us, and the awesome nature of your call to the particular places that we're in, even when they might feel small. Thank you that they are alive with your holy presence. Open our eyes to see it, Lord. Open our eyes to see you. Open our ears to hear your command. Make us every sense so alive to you in the here and now.